Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Anyway, this time for our farming slot, Marie Lavery joins us once again. Good afternoon, Marie.
Good afternoon. Isn't it a great afternoon?
It is a lovely afternoon out there.
Yeah, fabulous altogether. Total yeah. blue skies now here.
And are the farmers moaning about it?
Depends on what part of the country you're in at the moment. Yeah, would you believe it? We're hearing reports of hay being made. It's very early, but these yeah. are, I always think people who make hay right at the beginning of May, they're kind of quite convinced there's no more summer coming. This is it. You know, we're getting our few days.
Well, they mightn't be wrong,
yeah,
really.
Get a light crop of hay made. And you know, hay is a bit like money in the bank, you know, or it's a bit like a credit union account. It's something we all want to have. And a few nice bales back in the back of the shed or in some house, you know, they're lovely for little calves. Sheep love the hay. It's a real kind of like, you know, muesli as opposed to eating porridge, you know. There's something very nice about it. And I find having a bit of hay around very comforting, you know. You just feel it's the right thing to do. Mm. But right now, leaving light crops of grass, you might be saying to yourself, like, why aren't farmers really taking advantage of this great weather at this stage? Well, often because they'd have put out some fertiliser on the ground. And so if they put out, say, 50 units of fertiliser, it takes about 2 units a day. The ground utilises about 2 units a day. So it would take 25 days for that to come out of the system. So you couldn't be making your silage until 25 days or, you know, 60 days or whatever it is, depending on what you put on. So this kind of really good weather would have caught people a little bit short. They wouldn't be quite ready to cut for hay or silage yet. Mm. But they may have some, nice little crops of hay on the go. But silage then is starting, and there's no doubt about that. That's beginning to happen all around the country. And you'll know a silage field because it's got really, really gone yellow, because the place, basically everything it's grown is shorn off of it. And there's two types of silage that you can get made, and pit silage or big bale silage. And big bale silage, people might give out about it and say it's unsightly and it's this, that and the other. But it's an absolute lifesaver when it comes to farmers. And
why do people say it's unsightly? These are the kind of big rolls.
Because the plastic kind of can get away on people. I mean, if you ever start to try and chase some of that plastic, if the wind catches it and pulls it off and puts it up in a tree somewhere, people are giving out.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the different waste disposal people have, you know, collection points for that waste silage. They do it every year. And, you know, people are absolutely delighted to make use of it and hand over all their waste plastic. But the silage, the big bale silage is great, because before you had big bale silage, if you had a small little field or a field in bad condition underground, you know, ground conditions, this famous word poaching, you know, where the ground would be, you know, quite heavy and, the water would hold a lot of water. You can put in much lighter equipment into those fields when you're using a big bale. And also, when you have a situation where you were hoping to get hay, but the next thing, a mist comes in, or you were just hoping you were going to save a crop of hay, and you're about a day and a half away from doing it, but the weather turns.
Mm.
That can be saved as well. Whereas in the past, it would just sit there and rot. And I have watched a bad field of hay turn into just rubbish.
Oh, God.
Because the grass has grown up through it. And, you know, because the weather has never turned. Like, you can get 20, 25 days rain here on a run and you never get a crop saved at all. So the big bale silage is really, really good. The trick is to get it properly wrapped and properly back into the yard from the field as quickly as possible. And not to damage it, because there's no point in going to the expense of making bales, because they're expensive enough. And then not finishing the job correctly by damaging them heading into the storage point. So, and you need to store them on good ground, level ground, water, you know, the water runs away from. Rather, you don't want them sitting in water, because you're going to end up then with rotten silage, unpalatable silage, and the animals are going to look at you and say, you expect me to eat this and produce milk or produce feed a calf, but you haven't got another thing coming. It's not going to happen. So that, you know, it's no more than anything you do, like if you were pickling beetroot, or if you were storing anything, you have to store it in a proper condition, or all the work that you put into growing it and saving it and mining it disappears by that. And one of the biggest culprits with bales are crows and jackdaws and birds like that, who come in and they start pick at it. And so minding that and managing, that's another job. And it's often why you see such a kind of very cheerful looking bales all around the country. It's not kind of to cheer everybody up, it's really to keep the crows off. And one of the ways you can do that is if you put some netting over it, put down the, you know, put down your the stacking of the bales as well. You know, you don't put six on top of six. You know, three high is about as much as you can do, because you'll squash the others at the bottom if you put anything much too much higher than that on it. And you often, if you're travelling around the country, you can see bales stacked like six and seven high. And, you know, it's not doing anything that the ones that are underneath any much good, because they're getting squashed.
Oh.
And they're not going to produce good silage out of it. So the silage, you know, you're always, people now are in much less risk of running into trouble with silage or running into trouble with a shortage of feed, because they can make, you know, a bit of round bale silage. There's every half of the young fellas in the country have a little rig where they have a baler, wrapper and a tractor, and they're going around their neighbours and they're making the 10 and the 20 bales for them, and it's handy and it's easy, and there's plenty of people offering the service. So the other then kind of silage that gets made is the big rig that comes into town, a bit like the circus. And you've got three or four tractors with trailers attached. You've got a, I was talking to my husband about this earlier, and I blame him, because we make round bale silage at home. We don't do pit silage. But between, you have to have a mower to cut it down, and then you can leave it there for a while to wilt, or you can swart it up. And swarting it is putting a couple of the rows together, and then this has to be picked up by a harvester, that has to be delivered into the trailer, then that has to be delivered into the yard, and then it has to be put into the pit, and then the pit has to be rolled, because if you leave a whole lot of air between the grass, you're not going to make really bad silage, and it's going to taste like vinegar. And again, the animals are going to look at you and say, you expect us to eat this? And because the pit is much bigger, there's a much easier chance for it to get everything spoiled. So that's a big operation, and there's not an awful lot of that happening yet. At the moment, it's still the small bales that are being made more. But in the next week or so now, the big silage rigs will really start going. And they'll be going until October. So it's a big operation. And, you know, it takes, I don't know how many people are actually employed in the sector, but, you know, there's so many silage rigs in every county in the country. And, you know, there's six or eight people definitely working on the rig, and then not to mind all the fellas going around with their own tractor and trailers, or their own tractors and balers and wrappers. So it really keeps an awful lot of, particularly college students, in pocket money, in money to pay for their rent next summer.
Okay.
Or, you know, people who do it, you know, they do it for every summer. And a lot of them are, you know, young students, and that's kind of what they do. And they do it for maybe 4 or 5 years.
Brendan in Killarney says, I'm working in the Chagas office testing grass for grass sugar levels and grass nitrate levels at the moment. If nitrogen is high, grass won't preserve properly.
That's right, yeah. That's what I said, that you know, even though it's perfect weather and you're looking at your fields, but you maybe put the nitrogen out only a month ago and you put out 50 units. Well, it needs 25 days minimum for that to get into the ground before you can cut it. But if you put in more, well, it's going to need that bit longer. So the sugars actually are very important as well, because the sugars are really, you know, what helps create the energy in the food and gives it a value. And one of the best times of the day to cut your silage is actually in the afternoon, when the sugar levels are very high. If you do it in the morning, it's more inclined to get waterlogged. You know, there's damp, there's mist, there's dew on the ground. You know, so it's much, much better both to pick the silage up in the afternoon and to have it cut in the afternoon. You've got much better sugar levels.
Macon Connemara says, I live in Connemara under, obviously he does, under a cloud of smoke from all the forest fires, nearly in tears with all the destruction. What can we do to educate, says Mick? And I suppose you don't think about that in Ireland, you can have these fires, but it's not necessarily people throwing matches into things.
No, it's Ireland's biggest forest, and there's a third of it burnt or more to the ground. And, you know, again, the employment that was creating and the income, you know, I mean, you're talking about millions and millions of euro here. And farmers can, you know, have to put their hands up. There is, you know, like there's nothing wrong with burning gorse. It's mainly gorse. Or I don't know whether now, down in our country now, you know, if you don't keep the gorse under control, it go out into the middle of the field. You know, I've seen this studio, you can reclaim back that much land on a whole line of a ditch because, you know, the gorse just keeps growing out if you don't keep after it. But I remember one of the very first jobs I got to do when I was in the journal was go down to Kerry to the funeral of two elderly brothers who had been caught in the backdraft of a gorse fire, and they'd both been smothered with the very intense smoke that comes from it.
Mm.
So farmers are allowed to do it, but only up until the 1st of March until the 31st of August. And it is absolutely illegal to do it after that, precisely because the you know, the gorse or the material they're burning might be that much drier, you know, after a dry spring, and you would end up with this kind of problem that we have now. So everything like this has been watched by satellite. There's about 30 fires going at the moment and being monitored by satellite. So it's not just the one in Galway, although that is the one that's causing the most devastation at the moment. But people know what the burning limits are. They know what the deadlines are. They know when it's legal and they know when it's not. And there's nobody can be defending it.
Yeah.
So Gerard
and
Murphy...
And is that largely the cause of a lot of these fires?
Well, Gerard Murphy is saying there's two causes, deliberate and farmers. And he says that's the vast majority of the reason. You know, people kind of say, oh, it's a bit of glass. You know, the way you were taught in the Boy Scouts to light a fire with a bit of glass. Well, I mean, a bit of glass now, you know, there might be a bit of that, but it's very, very little. It's not the bit of glass. I do believe now there is somebody taken or arrested in around the Tyrone, along the border.
Mm.
But Mr. Murphy of Quilcha Forestry is absolutely categoric that it is either farmers or deliberate. And so, you know, why would you want to be kind of setting fire to that?
Mm.
And, you know, when you think of all the people who are working on trying to keep to quench that fire. And I was looking at the helicopter view of it online there this morning. And I mean, it really is quite horrendous and very inaccessible. And, you know, the risks that the people who are fighting the fire and the fact that they're totally consumed with that instead of maybe doing what they would usually be doing. You know, and with no reason, you know, because this shouldn't have happened.
And if it's farmers, is that because they're looking to burn back a bit of gorse, but then they don't properly extinguish the fire?
Well, what happens is you cut it out and, you know, you make a big clump of it. And, you know, if there's a strong wind blowing, all you need is a spark and a spark has gone over to the next thing and down along a ditch. And you can see that happening so quickly. You know, the thing is, we've had no rain, or next to no rain, for a month nearly.
Mm.
So everything is quite dry. And all you need is that little tinder and off it goes. And the next thing, you've a whole ditch on fire. And, you know, two fields over, there's a bit of forestry that nobody ever thought about. And, you know, the next thing, that's where it is. And so it's... you know, you really need to know what you're doing when you're setting a fire. But either ways, it's illegal to do it from the 1st of March to the 30th of August. It shouldn't be done.
At all,
At all.
Yeah.
So...
I wonder, is it necessarily that easy to prove that it was Farmer X or Farmer Y?
Well, they can really... Yeah, it'd be... Well, you know, you can't until somebody's actually caught doing something.
Yeah.
But they can know where they start from anyway. And that's the beginning point.
Yeah. Don't forget all the little animals affected by the fire in Galway.
I know,
it's not
the
only the human suffering, says that in the text. It's a very good point.
Yeah.
And on the subject of the good weather, I'm practically doing a rain dance down here in Waterford. There's no growth, says the texter. And speaking of sun, though, this is, I suppose, something that can be used even on non-sunny days. You wanted to talk about a solar-powered water pump.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, this is an interesting little story, and we have the full information on it in this week's journal. And it's a fellow by the name of Brian Davis from Borrisakeen, and Borrisakeen in Tipperary, and he's come up with this arrangement how you can pump water with solar energy. Now, it's all very fine, say, on a home farm, you know, because the yard has electricity and the house has electricity. But the vast majority of farms in this country have bits of land. They're fragmented. So there's 20 acres here and there's 15 acres there and, you know, maybe 30 acres over the road further. But the one thing they all don't have is electricity.
Because you don't think about that.
You don't think about that, you know. So there's they have the four fields, no electricity. So nowadays, with a lot of the environmental schemes, it's not possible for the animals to come near, you know, streams or rivers running to get into them, especially if you're in one of the environmental schemes. So you can't use your water point as the stream anymore. Mm. So you're having to either pump it up from the river, or, you know, which you might be able to do, or you're bringing it in on tankers. And, you know, maybe every day you're having to bring a tanker of water down to the castle.
That would be expensive, I would have thought. Yeah.
Well, it's expensive and it's really time consuming. You know, just think how long it takes to fill a big tanker, your slurry tanker, with water, bring it over, wait for it empty, you know, then another day, da-da-da. And then you only have one truck. So maybe you have a farm of 50 or 60 acres and basically it's in two big fields, because you can only let the cattle into it because there's only one water truck down at the end serving the two paddocks, and you're moving from one side to the other. And you're not getting any use, really use, out of the land. So this guy, Brian, I think he's an engineer by profession, but he kind of looked at the problem because he was dealing with it himself. And he's come up with a solar energy system that can actually really work. And we have the story. It's on Robert and Ivan Austin's farm. He has one in operation there. And that's a 40-acre outside farm. And it, you know, before they put in these the solar panel system, it was only able to cope with about 40 cattle. It's now coping with 70 weanlings or yearlings. The farm is in 8 paddocks. There's 6 water trucks, all because he's now getting the water, powering the water through the solar panel.
That's brilliant.
And it's only now, the full cost of the whole thing is about €1,450, and that's everything that's supplied, and that's a system that will supply enough water for 80 cattle. So, you know, it's just a clever way. It takes a heap of labour out of it. It makes the land so much more efficient. And it's all for the price of like just €1,800.
Right. Thanks, Mary, for coming in to us. Mary Lavery there from the Farmers Journal. Back in a couple of minutes.
And if you're interested, solarpumpsolutions.ie.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big cheque for the delivery guy? Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.